we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz, coming to you this week from the Guardian Hay Festival. And we start with a small print on the side of Tesco's Starlights, read by Peter Donaldson.
Ideal for decorating your garden, for indoor use only.
And our thanks to Joanna Kinberger of Bucharest for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Sue Perkins. And opposite them on my left, Simon Evans and Dr. Phil Hammond. Jeremy, have a listen to this.
Time to get busy, such a lot to do. Building and fixing to look good, I do. Bob and again, it's a really good sound. Working all day till the sun goes down.
Yes, indeed, Bob the Builder, our usual high intellectual standard. Jeremy, who's planning for a faster future?
This is about planning. In an effort to do something about global warming, we will now all be allowed to build our own nuclear power station. So long as our neighbours can't see it. And all kinds of incentives to produce less carbon dioxide. Instead of drinking Perrier water, which is naturally carbonated, you can have delicious uranium cordial. I think it was announced by Ruth Kelly, who gets to announce... I tell you what, if all my family die in a horrible accident, I want the police to send Ruth Kelly to the house to give me the news. She's the person just charged with saying miserable things in a strangely Valerie Singleton voice.
Ruth Kelly said it's a planning system fit for the 21st century, and you thought, but you're not fit for the 21st century.
She's not fit for any century.
Is Ruth Kelly not... my memory may be bad, but was she not the one who deliberately walked away from the education job saying she wasn't up to the job? She was just not good enough.
No, that was the other one.
That was Estelle Morris.
Yeah. There's Estelle Morris.
There's a whole
that
range
was a doppelganger.
She's walked towards lots of jobs she's not very good at.
It's a sort of... There is a sort of Peter principle in reverse in operation, isn't there, in the government, of people being demoted until a point of competence. They just come down and down until they find them a job. I obviously misread this planning. I thought it was all about extensions rather than supermarkets and just sort of home extensions.
You can have an extension for your granny so long as you put her on a treadmill that generates electricity.
Yes. It does seem to me most people build extensions just to house the things that they have that they don't really need or want, like garden furniture and exercise equipment. And
the granny.
The granny, elderly relatives. And having driven up here this evening to Herefordshire, and there's a lot of space around here, isn't there? Why don't we just... Would this just come on? There is a lot of space in Herefordshire. If it was given over as the national attic...
You're not in Herefordshire, we're in Powys. Anyway...
I drove through Herefordshire to get here. It's not a point on which you should be taking issue and offence.
Just 1 second there, because I just need to get someone to start Simon's car. Ambitious government proposals to fast-track the planning of buildings from conservatories to nuclear power stations, and indeed conservatories on nuclear power stations, have been welcomed by big business and criticised by the Green Lobby. To back the new proposal, the government cited past delays in planning applications. Heathrow's Terminal 5, for example, took more than 7 years to get planning permission, although to be fair, the relevant documents spent 4 years going round a carousel in Dusseldorf. Sue, which members are now more private than ever?
Ah, yes, this is the Freedom of Information Bill, where we're now not allowed to know what MPs spend their money on, which is very, very sad. I was delighted to see that... is it David McLean who spent £3,000 on a quad bike because he wants to visit his constituents? Where do his constituents live? Mordor? I mean, what kind of rough terrain do they live in that he needs an enormous quad bike with huge beefy... What next? A jetpack? So I think it's a terrible thing, obviously, but apparently they've done it because us, the great British public, have been asking too many annoying questions, and it takes up a lot of their time. Like, for instance, somebody had written in to ask how many packets of Ferrero Rocher had the ambassador at the Foreign Office bought that year, and apparently that's tiresome when we do that. So it's to protect us from our own silly questions.
I just think, I don't want to know this. There's too much information in the world. If you key the words essential information into Google now, you get 254 million hits. That's more information than I need. I'm against freedom of information. I think lock the stuff up. Keep it away. Put it under lock and key and let people go and visit it on a monthly basis at most.
Hundreds of Radio 4 listeners going, what a sensible point that man is making.
Too much information.
We're sure that Edward Heath just never met the right girl. I think Simon's right that we have got enough information already. I mean, when the government is in illegal occupation of a sovereign country and has made terrorism vastly worse and created, you know, ethnic genocide in a country which, although a dictatorship, was reasonably stable and has increased terrorism, you don't stroke your chin and think, do you know, I think these people might be up to something.
The thing is that information begets information. I mean, you talked about the quad bike, and he justified the quad bike by saying he has multiple sclerosis.
Yes. Mm.
Therefore, he needs to ride a quad bike.
It's true, actually.
David, I don't quite know what the answer to
well,
that is.
Well, he does, but my feelings on that...
I've never prescribed a quad bike.
Surely then...
Feature interferon, I would try first, probably. Yeah. maybe a quad bike.
If he had a 50, quid pouch of grass on his expenses bill, then he would be asking questions, wouldn't you?
That's a patient choice for you.
MPs have voted to exempt themselves from the new Freedom of Information Act. The campaign to exempt Parliament from Freedom of Information laws was led, as you said, Sue, by David McLean, Conservative MP for Penrith, in case anybody wants to write. And sadly, Mr. McLean suffers from MS, but more tragically, he's also been diagnosed as a complete and utter bastard. Simon, who's been criticised for his lack of grammar?
This will be David Cameron, who...
Correct, 2 points.
Cameron, who has flown in the face of or swum against the tide of or whatever other form of transport against the prevailing wind, has, against Tory wishes, generally speaking, he has said that grammar schools are not something that we can return to. It's a lot of old-fashioned nonsense. Eton is the way forward. And the one thing that doesn't often come up when people talk about grammar schools is that the necessary corollary is to have secondary moderns next door, which, talking about those, is a bit like suggesting let's reintroduce scurvy in the black and white minstrel show or something. Doesn't fill people with quite the same rosy glow as the grammar school, but
someone's got to clean the chimneys, though, haven't they?
David Cameron said he didn't want to divide children into successes and failures at the age of 11. He thought, what are you thinking? 16 is a better time. David Cameron is facing a Tory revolt over his decision to support the government's plans to abolish grammar schools. The policy was denounced as ridiculous and absurd by the Conservative backbench 1922 committee. Actually, interestingly, ridiculous and absurd is the motto of the 1922 committee. Right, Phil, which patsy got away with a confidence trick this week?
My favourite politician, I presume, Patsy Hewitt.
Oh, we love her.
His cunning plan to save the NHS is to patronise people to death. Cut waiting list of Australia is the most patronising woman in history. She had a vote of no confidence, sadly rejected, but she's upset just about everyone. She's upset the junior doctors, she's upset the nurses, she's upset the midwives. Nobody likes her. It's difficult to feel sorry for junior doctors because some of them are quite posh. And basically they've had this system where there are 30-odd thousand junior doctors going for three posts because we've increased numbers but we don't have enough consultant posts for them to go to. And they produced this system which meant that a ridiculous computer system which didn't allow for your previous experience or anything you'd done before, it started becoming incredibly leaky. So they actually made a spreadsheet of people's sexual orientation and religion and then released it on the internet next to named doctors. So it said Dr. whatever, Phil Hammond, bisexual atheist.
You heard it here first.
And then doctors could log on and they could change other people's applications. The whole thing leaked and fell to pieces. There was a judicial review this week, which unfortunately the junior doctors lost, but the judge said it was a grossly unfair system. And we're now almost certainly not going to fill posts for August the 1st, which is when doctors take over. So please, please don't get sick in August. That's the only way out of this mess.
Why can't they replace this application system for junior doctors with the system we used to have called Didn't I Know Your Father?
But that's exactly what it was. We only have a few posts, not everyone can be a consultant, but we've got to get the best doctors in the best posts, and it's not done that, which is actually a disaster for the NHS, and disaster for us if we're going to get sick in 20 years' time.
But at least you don't feel strongly about it. Phil.
I do feel incredibly sorry, but, you know, the junior doctors, they're all very middle class, and you interview them, they say, you know, it's terribly awful now, if I don't get this, I'll have to go and work in the city or be a lawyer, or I might have to go to Australia. It's not really Jimmy napping up the workers. That's the difficulty that they have, I fear.
Patricia Hewitt has survived a vote of no confidence in the House of Commons and also a High Court attempt by junior doctors to have changes to their recruiting system made unlawful. In the court, Patricia Hewitt's lawyers publicly repeated how sorry she is for the uncertainty and anxiety caused to junior doctors, while privately the Health Secretary wondered if she dare take that burning sensation to the GP yet. Oh, don't you wish it now? At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Sue have got 4 points, but Phil and Simon have got 5. we start round two with a cutting from the New York Times.
An adult female humpback whale and her calf have meandered almost 90 miles upriver from their native habitat in the Pacific Ocean. Curious onlookers flooded to the Port of Sacramento docks hoping to get to see the whales, said Teresa Bledsoe, a clerk with Sacramento Port Division. She added, "People are drawn, I think, because it's like a fish out of water."
And our thanks to Richard Breedy of Washington for spotting that. Jeremy, whose spying is rubbish?
Well, this is more environmental stuff. The government is trying to make us all recycle more stuff. And one of the things that local authorities are doing is putting microchips in bins, which I'm a bit worried about because my bin's already got wheels. I don't really want it to have artificial intelligence as well. Already after a collection, I find it halfway up the road. I think it's Orwellian to the extent
that... You're not throwing that out, are you?
It's Orwellian. In fact, last year it went to Catalonia to fight the fascists in Spain. It's been to Wigan Pier. But no, they're putting these things in your bin, and all that shows is where your bin is. But I think it can weigh what you put in there.
Well, they're electronically tagging salad, basically, aren't they? They've got a little bug
offending
in there.
Salad.
Yeah, offending salad leaves.
Yeah, control orders on salad.
I'm being confused here. The genuine question, why do they need a microchip to weigh your bin? Why not just have a sort of scales type of
health and safety, mate.
On the van as it picks it up.
I think the idea is it's a sort of a stealth bin. You're not supposed to know it's there. It's spying on you, I think, is the idea. Well, it's cheaper than MI5.
But your neighbours will spy on you quite happily. You don't need a bin to do it. They could just be asked this sort of acidic woman down my road what I get up to. She could tell them like that. She keeps a logbook. I've seen her.
More than 3 million bins in Britain have been equipped with microchips in a bid to spy on household rubbish. The Environment Secretary David Miliband also announced a clampdown on junk mail, excess packaging and plastic shopping bags, but was criticised for failing to do anything about fly tipping. Which, as you know, is the ancient rural practice of sneaking up behind a blue bottle and pushing it onto its back.
That would have got a bit of a laugh in Herefordshire, I think.
Doing my best. Actually, it's quite good talking about recycling at a literary festival. There's so many authors who like to recycle. Or am I just thinking of Archer? Now...
It's never honest, the question. The answers at literary festivals, I mean, you never say, so what inspired you to write this book? You're not going to say, well, my wife was nagging me for a conservatory and the publisher said I could get a £20,000 advance if I knocked something out by May. I mean, you're not going to say.
Simon, who spies an eye in the sky?
Oh, I see. These are drones, which I think are, in what has been described without a trace of irony as a pilot scheme in Liverpool, are being tested to see. Drones are a sort of small helicopter-like objects which can be flown by remote control. They're being used to observe potential criminal activity anyway. Little satellite, well, not satellite, they fly at about 500 metres in the air, little black, sinister-looking helicopters with cameras on them. And the British have been so desensitised to snooping by CCTV and what have you that we don't realise that this is some sort of script from a bizarre sci-fi movie, and it's going on and it's happening right now.
I think it's good that police should have these, because I was reading the manufacturer, the supplier, said that actually they're so small that they are classified as toys. I thought, in that case, giving to police, it's better than giving them guns, isn't it?
It's become like urban clay pigeon shooting, right?
That's just been too tempting, right?
Yeah. We get phoned off 300 times a day, apparently. I mean, if I'd known, I'd put some makeup on. That's
I don't think the name as well, Police Drone. You think, oh, that's Sting's last album, wasn't it? In the week in which Ian Redhead, the Deputy Chief Constable of Hampshire Police, said the rise of CCTV was turning Britain into an Orwellian country, Merseyside Police announced they would be trialling a flying spy drone to help them in their fight against crime. The device will be used in a 3-month trial to monitor criminals. Awful lot easier than just arresting them, I would have thought. Phil, who won't be sent to the police from Russia with love?
Oh, well, they've tracked down the killer of Mr. Litvinenko. Not hard, because he was covered in traces of polonium-210, so it wasn't the best way of covering your tracks. The poison tip umbrella probably would have been better. I think he's called Mr. Lugovu.
Lugovoy.
Yep.
Anything foreign-sounding will do.
Yes. Just put an off at the end.
Obolinskovitsky. Yes,
just pretend you're a registrar marrying someone from the ethnic minority.
Well, unfortunately, the Russians have tried to extradite 17 people who have been rude about Putin, and we've never played ball. And the one they want, I'm going to get this wrong as well, is Mr. Berezovsky. They want to do swapsies with Mr. Berezovsky for Mr. Lugovy, but nobody's playing ball. And actually, it's all rather sinister, of course, because Putin controls the entire world's gas supply. He's got this little pipe that goes through his house, and he sings, "I've got the power," and he turns it on and off. Scares the hell out of him. All of a sudden, the gas goes, and it's rather convenient, isn't it, that we're having this huge mock, because it really would be a cold war, wouldn't it, if they turned all the gas off? It'd be bloody freezing. But it's actually very convenient that this has come up in the same time that Blair and Brown are trying to push through all these new nuclear power stations. Scare people witless into thinking those nasty Ruskies, they come over here with their polonium-210, they can cut off our gas supply at any time, therefore we need 60 new nuclear power stations.
Terribly expensive for of assassination is, what is it, some estimates say £10 million, which you can, you know, it's very Russian, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like they're tossing their money. You could get a small flat in Chelsea for that sort of money. But
relations between Britain and Russia are becoming increasingly strained after Russia refused to hand over businessman and ex-KGB agent Andrei Lugovoy, who the CPS want to prosecute for the murder of Alexander Litvinenko. You may recall that Litvinenko's killer left traces of polonium in the hotel rooms where he slept, the restaurant tables where he ate, the aircraft seats where he sat, all of which were traced by credit card receipts to Mr. Lugovoy. So it's pretty inconclusive, really. And at the end of round two, Jeremy and Sue have got 8 points, but Simon and Phil are still in the lead with 9. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from the BBC Kent website.
A road crash involving 4 cars has happened after a driver braked to avoid a squirrel, according to Kent police. Officers said 3 cars ploughed into the back of an elderly motorist's car after he tried to avoid the animal, which escaped unharmed. Some people suffered minor injuries and the cars had to be towed from the scene. Police said it was not known if the squirrel was grey or red.
And our thanks to Mike Lightwing, who sent that in. Jeremy, who's trying to burger up the dictionary?
Oh, well, I was watching this on Newsnight. A man from McDonald's was on. The dictionary has McJobs in it, which is a sort of acronym like ASBO, except that no one would ever aspire to it. There are McDonald's employees, very happy, successful lawyers, and if anyone dares say anything critical of McDonald's, those lawyers will hunt them down like dogs to the end of their days. So all I want to say is that I can't think of anything bad about McDonald's at all. I think they're good people.
If they've taken offence to this, and since, you know, McDonald's is an American organisation, perhaps in this country at least we could refer to them as Wimployment.
There are worse things for young people to be doing. They could be in the Hutu militia. Apart from that,
that's it.
That's about it.
I don't know if it's a serious point, but Douglas Coupland, who coined the phrase in his book, I do remember reading it, and it was the specific point was that people were deliberately taking muck jobs because they didn't want any responsibility in life. These were people, it's only a muck job if you've got a degree before you take it, that's the point, if you're way overqualified in order to have it. If you're just, you know, secondary modern fodder, and you have emerged into, you know, the employment wasteland that is modern Britain, and you get a job in McDonald's, that is not a muck job, that is your job. It's only a muck job in relation to your educational qualifications at the point at which you...
So they're muck snobs as well as
exactly,
everything else.
Exactly, yeah.
McDonald's have started a campaign to have the word McJob removed from dictionaries, claiming that the term referring to low-paid, dead-end employment is insulting to thousands of their staff. I thought the word McDonald's is insulting to people who like food.
Is it incitement to say McDonald's is evil and we should burn all their franchises?
No.
No, okay. But the views of Jeremy Hardy are not necessarily those of the management.
Yes, they are. Yeah. The BBC are 100% behind me on everything I say.
Oh, you can almost hear the razor blade slicing through the recording tape now. Moving on. Sue, have a listen to this. I told you what I think I'd save her. Life for once would do me a favour. Baby, it's just a butcher. And if it's all right, a sharp sharp. Good God.
The New Zealand band. Spit Ends.
Yes.
Good God.
That's terribly impressive. Why, a doctor with his finger on the pulse. All the music this evening comes from Peter Donaldson's personal record collection. Sue, whose asexual activity made jaws drop?
Ah, yes. This is the hammer-headed sharks who got pregnant even though they'd not been anywhere near male sharks for over 3 years, which has given hope to many people, not least my mother, who's been trying to squeeze a grandchild out of me for many years now. she'll be absolutely delighted that I can do it by parthenogenesis. She doesn't really care, just as long as there is one. Asexual budding, just crack on with it, she says. I can see, actually, why these sharks don't really attract the opposite sex, bearing in mind that if they were to fill out a personal ad, it would simply read, large, fat mammal, reasonable-sized blowhole, face like an anvil. So, they're not lockers.
They're not mammals!
They're marsupials or insects or something.
They're mammals!
They're cartilaginous fish.
They're fish!
All right, I will agree they're cartilaginous fish. But they're not marsupials of the sea, are they? They're bouncing on the sea floor.
Crustaceans, that's what they are.
They're fish. Not lookers.
Amphibians.
Welcome to National Geographic Radio.
That's true, they do look like Michael Winner, that's
they
true.
They do.
Anyway, they're not hammerhead sharks either, that's the thing. Hammerhead sharks have a head shaped like a hammer. These are bonnet head sharks.
Right.
Because they love Pride and Prejudice. I don't know why. I don't know.
The period costume-wearing sharks.
Yeah, they are, yes. They're actually called Sverna Tiburo.
Ah, now I'm with you. If you said that...
Yeah. Also the name of one of Bob Geldof's children, I think.
Amazing though, wasn't it? This amazing virgin birth had occurred, and they let the baby get killed by a stingray. It seemed incredibly sort of lax to allow this wonderful creature born by virgin birth just to be killed.
But the guy he was talking about also was called Paolo Prodhole, and I remember that. Which is both alliterative and slightly rude, so he wins extra points in a special book that I'm running.
What is going on in our zoos? People are believing sharkesses who claim not to have done it, even though they're out the duff. They have a baby, and then it's killed by a mother elephant kicking her calf into it. It's just... are going, my sugar.
A hammerhead shark from Henry Dorley Zoo in
you
Omaha.
You said it was a bonnet head.
A bonnet head shark.
But they aren't mammals. That's the key thing.
No, they're not.
They are fish.
They're not crustacea, though, are they?
No, well, it's one of those things.
It's not got a bonnet and a thick shell. You make it sound like a Vauxhall Viva.
A bonnet head shark.
I can't believe that a Catholic like you isn't being more respectful of this tiny...
She's in shock. She wasn't expecting Jesus to come back as a fish. No.
He's not going to take any chances, is he? He's not going to come back dressed as a hippie again, is he? Look what happened the last time.
In Bethlehem either. Have you seen what they've done to the place? It's terrible.
So many potential letters of complaint this week.
Just imagine a load of people at Sunday Mass praying for the Lord to come again and then suddenly hear dirdum. And in the holy waters.
A hammer bonnet shark.
I've got to crack on, I have to get on.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the font.
A bonnet head shark from Henry Dorley Zoo in Omaha, Nebraska, has astonished scientists by giving birth to a pup. Well, there's a story. Shark gives birth to dachshund.
What's that, Lassie? You've just eaten a swimmer's legs.
Sadly, the virgin birth shark pup was later eaten by another shark, proving conclusively that nature abhors a show-off. Right. Simon, who fought the lawn and the lawn won?
Is this to do with the bowling green?
It is to do with the bowling green.
That's good. There's a bowling green in Norfolk that has been used for that purpose since time immemorial, over 20 years. And now somebody wants to build some bungalows on it. That's the 21st century Norfolk style. Anyway, the bowlers are unhappy about it. They are claiming squatters' rights. I believe the legislation which says if you've been somewhere for long enough, it becomes yours automatically, even though technically it belongs to somebody else. And they are taking their case to court to stop the owner of the land building bungalows so that they can carry on playing bowls.
What they do in the bowling greens, the police would come along and they'd eject the smallest, palest OAP and throw him out first. You'd find the rest of them would just roll out one by one to try and get as close to him as possible. No bowling fans in then. Okay.
I don't think anyone is going to want to live in a bungalow that's built on a controversial bowling site. That'd be like Pet Cemetery all over again, wouldn't it?
A bowls club in the village of Hales near Norwich is claiming squatters' rights on its bowling green to prevent it being evicted by developers. And bowling is an important part of our cultural heritage, as quintessentially British as huddling in a damp tent pretending you like books. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Sharon Close, or someone who lives in Sharon Close, and it's from the Hartlepool Mail. And it says, an article in Tuesday's Mail suggested that John and Kathleen Rees's 60th wedding anniversary was being made even more special by being on the same day as the Queen's birthday. Mr. and Mrs. Rees would like to clarify that this was not the case, as they are in fact Republicans.
Sue. And this was sent in by Kirsty Alley. I don't know if it's Kirsty Alley or just someone who lives in Kirsty Alley. It says here, the fashion industry has started an inquiry to take action on super skinny models. A lineup of some of the biggest movers and shakers in the fashion world, from model management to designers and supermodels, began investigating the health and safety, plus the working conditions of London Fashion Week models. Whilst recommendations from the independent model health inquiry will not be binding, they will carry weight.
Simon.
This is sent in by Mrs. Steve Beck. I don't know if it's a Mrs. Steve Beck or somebody of that name who lives in a small northern river, but police are investigating the possible criminal connections of an elderly Second World War veteran found beheaded in his back garden. Relatives of 82-year-old Mark Hutchinson found him in the town of Armidale, about 250 miles north of Sydney. Hutchinson's head had been placed next to his body, although the cause of death has not yet been established.
Dr. Hammond.
This one was sent in by Dr. Phil Hammond. I don't know if that's the famous ginger love monster. Or and it was me trying to find directions on the internet to where I'm staying tonight. Somewhere near Hay on Wye, and somebody called Payne's Castle. And I was supposed to be staying in the Ox Inn, so I Google whacked it. Got five telephone numbers, none of which worked. So I thought, go on the I Love Wales website. The Ox Inn at Payne's Castle burnt down a few years ago. It has now reopened as the Roast Ox Inn. There's hope for the Cuddy Sark yet.
Let's take a look at the final score, Jeremy and Sue have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Simon and Phil with 13. And before we leave you, here is a cutting from the BBC News website about the fire at the Cuddy Sark.
The boat has three decks, and it appears two have suffered substantial damage, said a spokesman. It's a setback on many levels.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Sue Perkins, Simon Evans and Phil Hammond. In the chair was Sandy Foxbig, and the news is read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, Roderick Crooks and Simon Littlefield, and the producer was Ed Morris. We'll be right back.